today for Who, What, Where, When, Why, we are talking to Anthony Lowenstein, author of Prophets of Doom and journalist and brilliant activist. You can read all about his stuff online on his website. But today we're going to be talking about the killing of an Australian and a dual Australian New Zealand citizen in Yemen in November 2013 in a US sanctioned drone strike. Thanks so much for joining me today, Anthony.
Thanks for having me again, Michelle.
Now, what happened, what do we know happened back in November 2013 in Yemen?
Not a lot, is the short answer. The slightly longer answer is that there were two citizens who were killed, as you rightly said. One was Australian, one was dual Australian-New Zealander. This is pretty typical, though, because when there have been drone attacks, and there have been drone attacks by the US for a number of years, started under Bush and continued and massively accelerated under Obama since 2000, since he came into power, 2009, essentially. And the information is very, very vague. The Australian government has released virtually no information. They've said that possibly these individuals were not directly targeted, but they were with Al-Qaeda members, and therefore they were essentially collateral damage. The New Zealand government has said, well, we were following or monitoring the New Zealand citizen, and he was a threat, and therefore basically good riddance. The US government has said nothing, which is pretty standard operating procedure. And the family of the Australian citizen, who was based in Townsville, have been, they told 7:30 on ABC TV last week, they've been told pretty much nothing. So essentially where the way these stories always go is that individuals are killed, we're then told that they are potentially terrorists or colluding with terrorists or sympathetic to terrorists. There's no trial, there's no public information, and the coverage in the media so far has been fairly uncritical with some exceptions. So we don't know a lot.
You sort of mentioned it then, but it's hard to get your head around. What were these two men actually accused of, and what are the facts that we know to back up those accusations?
They went to Yemen a while ago. That's pretty much not in dispute. They allegedly were there to teach English, which clearly is very possible. Who knows? The allegation that was made by pretty much all major parties, namely the Australian government and the New Zealand government, the US government has said nothing, is they were involved in some way with AQAP, which is Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is an Al-Qaeda offshoot based in Yemen, which is viewed by the US government, or at least said by the US government, to be the most dangerous Al-Qaeda threat now in the world, after most of Al-Qaeda has been decimated in Pakistan and Afghanistan. So they allegedly were working with them or colluding with them. There was an allegation last week, and this is how these stories appear. We hear nothing, and all of a sudden we hear, usually in the Australian newspaper, which is essentially a mouthpiece for the national security state, a report that said one of these guys was allegedly involved in the kidnapping of a Westerner in Yemen. Therefore, he was a threat. Therefore, he should be killed. Now, this information could be true. He may well have been involved in working with Al-Qaeda. He may well have been involved in kidnapping a Westerner. All that is absolutely possible. But even if that is true, one of the people who are very critical of drones, including me and others, says, well, where's the evidence for this? Do we feel comfortable with an Australian government or a US government or a New Zealand government essentially sanctioning a death warrant without any trial, without any public discussion about whether we have the right to kill citizens without due process? There's no information after they've been killed. The family of the individuals have been given virtually no information, and the governments have either said nothing or they've supported it. I mean, this is the state of the war on terror 2014.
Are these attacks legal in any, you know, international law sense?
The US government says yes. The Bush administration said yes. The Obama administration had said yes. They've released very little legal justification to do so, to prove it. Many legal scholars, many academics have said no. There's been countless attempts in the US courts and elsewhere to, I guess, not just find them illegal, but to actually get more information about the legal justification for drone attacks. This has really become much more of an issue in the last years in the US, where the majority of people the US kills through drone attacks are not American. They are Pakistani, Yemeni, whoever they're from. There have been a handful of US citizens who have been killed. There's no doubt about that. And there's been no real justification given legally how the US government has the right to kill US citizens without a trial. And this has come up particularly in the last few years a great work by Jeremy Scahill, who's an American investigative journalist who was just in Australia for the Sydney Writers' Festival. He did an amazing book and film called Dirty Wars last year, and the film was Oscar-nominated as a documentary, so I urge readers to have a look if they can get a chance. And he was really looking at the argument that says, he spent a lot of time with one of the families of the killed US citizens, who was a imam who was seen as moderate, and post 9/11, after a number of years, became radicalised, there's no question about that, went to Yemen, and then was killed by a drone. And then 2 weeks after that, his son was also killed by a drone. And even if, and this is what Scahill argues, even if one accepts, which I don't, that his father was an awful terrorist who deserved to be killed, what on earth could justification be for a 16-year-old child? There's never been any justification given for that. So the complete lack of transparency or any discussion about legal rights or justification is really what permeates this entire culture. And what's, I think, really curious is that there's so little outrage by our political and media elites about this, especially in Australia, I mean, let alone anywhere else.
Well, I want to get to that. I mean, we, as you mentioned, we now know that Obama's drone campaign, which was really amped up under him prior to what it was in the Bush administration, it started 3 days into his presidency. But there was a certain degree of outrage when it was revealed he put an American citizen, the man that you were speaking about just then, on a kill list, who had not been charged with any crime.
Yeah.
That was Anwar al-Awlaki. And it was his son, but his son was just searching for his father, wasn't
Indeed.
He? And then he was caught up in this. You were just sort of getting to this, but have you been surprised that there hasn't really been more interest about the fact that Australian citizens have been killed here?
I wish I could say yes, Michelle, but in truth, not really. I think what you've found, something I've written about for a long time, is that in the post 9/11 environment, these issues existed not with drones, but with other weapons pre 9/11, but with post 9/11 environment, there is a sense somehow that the state makes a pronouncement, this person's a threat, this group is a threat, therefore we have the right to do whatever we can to destroy or neutralise that threat. Drones, missiles, kidnapping, extraordinary rendition, whatever it may be. And most of the press, again with many, or I shouldn't say many, a handful of notable exceptions, accept that narrative by publishing uncritically the propaganda essentially from, in Australia's case, Defence Department or the various other intelligence services. Most of the stories that we read about this recent case, at least two individuals who were killed in Yemen, the vast bulk of that information was coming from so-called official sources. And what do you think they're going to say? They argue two things. One, we knew nothing about the strike before it happened, which I think is seriously questionable. And secondly, we have no problem with it anyway. Now, the lack of outrage is twofold. One, you have a Labor Party, which is now in opposition, who have no issue with drone strikes. They said pretty much nothing about it when they were in power. You do have a handful of Labor backbenchers. Melissa Park made a strong speech in Parliament last week questioning drone attacks by the US, to her great credit. You have Scott Ludlam, who's a Green senator from Western Australia, who's done some wonderful work. He's written articles, he's spoken out about it, talking about the complete lack of accountability for drone strikes. There are a few people in Parliament, but very, very few. The Labor leadership has no problem with these issues because, as we all know, the Labor Party has signed up to the blind allegiance to the US alliance many, many years ago. So there's pretty much bipartisan support when it comes to the press. The Murdoch press is pretty much in lockstep supporting the US war on terror. This Fairfax press is a bit critical, but I had a piece, one of my columns in The Guardian a few weeks ago, reporting about how the US and Australian press reported on these killings. What the Fairfax press did, with a few exceptions, was essentially republish propaganda as news. It was, in other words, the people who were killed were essentially said to be terrorists. There's no evidence for this. There's no information. Maybe they were, but we don't know that. Because
so what you mean there, too, though, is that kind of accepted journalistic norms, like using the word alleged in front of something, just simply gets dropped?
Absolutely. And I think when it comes to terrorism, one of the problems is, and this is the post 9/11 disaster for national security reporting, I mean, is that the vast bulk of these journalists are insiders who want to get sanctioned leaks from officials, whether it's government or intelligence. And the result of that is that they're publishing pretty much without question a narrative which argues that somehow, A, the West, Australia, the US, has the right to kill citizens we claim is a threat. Very few questions about the legal backing for it. And we shouldn't also forget one important Australian component here is Pine Gap. For those who don't know, Pine Gap is a US intelligence space in the middle of the country near Alice Springs. Weirdly enough, on Australian territory, but actually Australia does not have full access to that site. So read that as you will, in terms of our independence as a supposed sovereign nation. There's a great deal of evidence to suggest that Pine Gap is providing a lot of information to the US that is being used in its drone strikes. There's evidence that suggests that Pine Gap was used to provide information to the US to target alleged insurgents in Iraq and Afghanistan. The complete lack of transparency about this has led someone like Malcolm Fraser, the former Australian Prime Minister, in his new book talking about the Australia-US alliance, that Pine Gap should be closed, that Australia should say, we no longer accept the fact that you, the US, uses our territory to target people because you say they're terrorists. Now, it's not going to happen anytime soon because both sides of politics think Pine Gap is wonderful and never say anything about it. But there is at least some discussion and arguing, as Fraser does, we could imagine a future where Australian citizens are being used willingly, I might add, by the Americans to target supposed terrorists and could be charged under international law for breaching war crimes. I mean, this is a serious
issue. But how would those cases actually be brought about? Because, you know, I've read quite a bit on this. I spoke a few years ago to Pakistani man Shahrazad Akbar, who's the legal director of the Foundation for Fundamental Rights, and he was talking about drone strikes when he came out to Australia, right when that Pine Gap information was just coming out. But, you know, Anthony, since then, I've barely heard anything about Pine Gap in Australia.
Yes, well, I mean, I suppose my answer to that is that there are a number of lawyers who I know in Australia who are trying to pursue this, but at the moment it's very, very difficult. You have to get hard evidence. There's a lot of allegations. There are documents that seem to suggest that Australia has direct involvement, but to go to a court of law, you need hard evidence to prove that this actually is the case. You need an individual to be highlighted to say this individual, this man or woman, is directly involved in the killing, for example, of an Australian citizen. That information is yet to appear. So I guess all I would say is that there are a handful of journalists and there are a number of lawyers who are trying very hard in Australia, the US, Pakistan, elsewhere to build legal cases, to almost to show a precedent that there would be a case of an individual who is held to account, American citizen, Australian citizen, whoever, for these kind of attacks. It's a difficult, painstaking process when there is so much secrecy around us and there's so little transparency.
And also so little will. And you know, you've definitely highlighted that about our politicians. And you mentioned Scott Ludlam before, and it was he who was questioning our very own Attorney General, George Brandis, in Senate hearings. And he asked him to comment on what he saw was the legality of these strikes under international law and what Australia thought of that. What was his answer, Anthony?
Well, Brandis essentially firstly refused to answer the question and then said we haven't got a position and then said actually, yes, we have got a position and they're legal. So this is our chief legal joker who essentially has no position and does have a position. I mean, Brandis, like pretty much every attorney general before him, man or woman, is a blind servant of the US surveillance state. So when it comes to these kind of issues, there is literally no chance that a government official, at the moment at least, will acknowledge anything or question it or seriously investigate or ask the US, is what you're doing legal? Is Australian involvement in this legal? I mean, the idea that Brandis, as our chief attorney general, would get legal advice to find out whether our own citizens are A, being killed in breach of international law, or our own citizens being used at Pine Gap to gather information to kill those Australian citizens. There's a lack of curiosity, and this is not, although this has got worse since 9/11, these issues existed, of course, well before it, but now we have the other question of drones.
Well, you talk about a lack of curiosity, but I worry that it's a little bit more insidious than that. Brandis also stated that this case has nothing to do with Australia, and those are his words. Ordinarily, what obligation does a government owe to its citizens?
Well, as listeners will remember, in the last year since 9/11, there's been a handful of cases of Australian citizens who essentially been left to the dogs by Australia. I'm talking about David Hicks, talking about Mamdouh Habib, and a number of others, individuals who essentially are classed as enemies of the state by the US, and therefore Australia has been willing to accept that justification. I agree with you, it's more than like a curiosity, it's a willful ignorance, but more than that, it's a belief somehow the US has the right to strike at will. This is really, I think, the heart of the issue, Michelle, where Jeremy Scahill talks in his book and film, really go into great detail about this, that ultimately you have a situation now where the Obama administration has declared any territory is a potential site where it's allowed to strike at will. If they claim that an individual is a threat in country X or area X, they have the right to assassinate, kill, kidnap, render that person. That is the state of play. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's happening as we speak. And at the moment, this is happening in generally non-Western countries, although there's been a lot of rendition in Western countries. To me, it's not a very far away reality to imagine that an individual is classed as a terrorist or a suspect by the US or Australia in a Western country, and someone is droned who lives in the outer suburbs of Melbourne. It is not that far away. And the scary... And that, just to me, is obviously profoundly worrying. Not that it's more of a worry when it happens here than in Yemen. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that these issues are going to come home faster than we think.
And I think that is a really key issue here, in that America, let alone Australia, are not at war with Yemen or Pakistan or all of these places where this takes you know, these actions happen. I mean, that's fairly extraordinary that they're able to operate there in such a, you know, manner so freely, isn't it?
Well, completely. And one of the issues that's been brought up on numerous occasions during the Bush administration, now the Obama administration, is that there are only a handful of countries that America officially is at war with. And the vast majority of countries that are being targeted by drone strikes are not those countries. So there's a weird situation in, say, Yemen, where the Yemeni government, which obviously was a dictatorship for many years, there was an Arab Spring-style revolution a few years ago. There's a new government there who is arguably just as corrupt as the last. And they are colluding with the US in these drone strikes. And the Pakistani government is exactly the same. So you have a situation where, on the one hand, publicly, the Yemeni government, the Pakistan government, say, yes, we're outraged, we're opposed to strikes, but in reality, they're actually colluding and helping. And they are aware that in the... within the people themselves, and this, of course, is the tragic, predictable reality of these kind of attacks in Yemen and in Pakistan. There is no doubt that the huge increase in support for not just extremism, but a belief somehow that the Yemeni and Pakistani governments are not legitimate, which in my view they're not, is directly related to these attacks. Just 2 days ago, when there was, listeners will remember, there was a huge attack on the Karachi airport by the Pakistani Taliban. The acknowledgement of that attack was directly related to the fact that if a drone strikes on their leadership, this is fueling terrorism. So if it's the idea, as we're told by Obama and his supporters, that somehow this is a clean war, that somehow we're only killing terrorists, the truth is that most investigations of drone strikes in the last years, as much as the information can be gained, suggest that countless civilians are killed in the process. Countless. So the result
Well, we
of
have
that
seen,
is,
you know, plenty of reports of whole wedding parties being
murdered.
And, you know, what do you think that these civilians' deaths do to a community? I've read reports about how they say that, you know, the very fact that there's this fear of drones is having an impact on things like, you know, children accessing healthcare and accessing education. You know, how does that spread out across a community?
Absolutely. Well, a few years ago I was working in Pakistan near the Afghan border, and I spoke to a number of civilians, journalists, individuals who were living in areas where drones are pretty much roving the air 24/7, and they were saying, apart from the fear, of course, that the drone's going to kill them, that's clearly a massive fear. It's, as you said, affecting children, affecting their sleep, affecting domestic violence apparently is massively increased. None of this, of course, is justified by anything, but the reality on the ground of these kind of the presence of drones, one of the things when I was in Gaza a few years ago, you can actually hear Israeli drones 24/7, and the effect of that is, I guess, it just keeps people permanently fearful, which is in some ways what, of course, Pakistan in this case, or the US or Israel wants. But the effect is it radicalizes people. So you have this weird situation. I always think of the great comment by Chomsky. It's so simple and yet so elegant. He essentially says, if you want to stop terrorism, stop participating in it. Stop assisting in terrorism. If we believe that a drone strike carried out by an individual who, for example, is based in an airbase in the US, using a drone in, say, Pakistan or Yemen, is a clean kill, so to speak, when you have countless civilians who have been killed in the process, if you don't believe that's going to bring massive blowback on the West, let alone huge trauma and anger within the communities there. And that's happening now. There's a reason in Yemen, for example, and these recent attacks on Australian citizens are but one of many, where radicalism in Yemen is thriving for this very reason. Because when you have a Yemeni state that is seen to openly collude with the US government in killing their own citizens, many of whom are civilians, what response would you expect? That's going to happen. And in Pakistan, very similar, and in other countries as well. And I think as the US is now increasingly widening its use of drones, there is definitely a policy in the last while of hugely expanding drone policy in Africa. There's many, many drone bases that are being expanded in Africa, Djibouti, which is one country which has a massive US base, Saudi Arabia and others. The problem is, as we often, as reporters, to get accurate information about this is bloody difficult. So you kind of get a piece here and a piece there, and you speak to people who have been affected by drones, and over the years, often spoken to many people who've either been directly affected or know people who have, and these people are not themselves extremists, but they say that it directly relates to that. So if Australia and George Brandis and Bill Shorten and all our supposed leaders think this actually is reducing terrorism, the effect, in fact, is the opposite.
Anthony Lowenstein, all of your work on this issue and many others can be found on anthonylowenstein.com and various publications. Thanks so much for your time again on Triple R this morning. We'll catch up with you soon, I'm sure.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for your time this morning, Anthony. We're going to take a track from Sun...